is there a thing where you are, if you are bald a certain way, do you swing a certain way?
Point, if you are really now still worried about your swing in the ball, what the f*** are you doing then?
Yeah. I visualized and I saw the night before that I'm going
to
win.
Okay, so we're very excited to have Heinrich Breiners back. Recently, we reposted your clip of your one and hole challenge we did at Copperleaf.
Hole in one challenge.
What did I say?
One and all.
One in the hole.
Oh, God. Long morning, clearly. And one of the comments, and I'm going to say now who we've got here with us, but one of the comments is just the swing tempo that you've got, Heinrich. That incredible tempo that's within your swing. But this morning, we've got Heinrich Breiners. You will all know him as recently winning the Stella Artois Championships. Congratulations on that. We'll show a bit of a clip of that. It was so emotional, Heinrich, and I think we were all there with you because we know where that relief, we might not relate to that relief, you might, but we could see it. And it was emotional for us as well. The Sunshine Tour player, the Challenge Tour, 10 Pro in 2006, 315 Sunshine tournaments now played, sure. 17 top 10 finishes. Lowest round, which is a change from the last time, is 64 twice.
Yeah,
64 was the lowest round before that.
Yeah.
So you've improved by one stroke. Heinrich Breiners, welcome to the show and thank you again for giving us your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's obviously a nice achievement to say that I've obviously won, and there was a lot of emotion, and I think it's quite nice to share it with everyone. And I think there was a lot of interest, obviously, after I won, and a lot of people that maybe wanted to know a little bit more. So when Captain Arthur sent me a message to say I must come on again and have a chat, I was like, most definitely. So yeah, I'm looking forward to having a chat, and always welcome to answer any questions, even the uncomfortable ones.
Yes.
But, and yeah, I mean, it's obviously been, there's been a lot of stuff that's been happening in the background, and I think it's always nice to speak about it on air.
Yeah, and I think if you don't mind, I'll set that up for us, Arfie, there, why we want to have open conversations. Chasing the Sun has inspired me a little bit. They opened up everything to us.
Mm.
The bad, the good, the in-between, the moments they messed up, there was vulnerability from each one of them. I mean, Sia was called out with Eben and Dame and
Dwayne
Vermeulen in front of the entire squad. Let's be honest, in front of the entire world, they were called out. It showed me that humbleness is always important. It showed me that we must never think uncomfortable conversations. And if we say uncomfortable, I think we classify it as that. But let's get down to some of the questions and some of the answers that are really inspiring and that we can relate to. And I think the success of the program has inspired us to say, we mustn't hold back anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody knows in any way what's going on. We've never tried to fake any sort of make you look the best for the day or make us look the best for the day. It's just an organic conversation.
Yeah.
And hopefully people are interested in this. The other part is we've learned a little bit in the show. What makes people interested to listen to it? The other part of it is, Heinrich, is that the moment people interact with you, when they watch you on the tour and the coverage that's so much better, it's a different watch.
Yeah.
When there's some relatability and somebody has gone, oh my word, that Heinrich's story, what he just explained it, how he answered it, that's something that grows viewership for all of you, and that's good. And that's what we've tried to do from the day we were here.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah,
I need you now to take me through that because I want you to do a couple of things. Tell me about that week leading up to it, in the moment, from the Thursday through to the Sunday. But then this win wasn't a winning putt. Somebody missed for the win.
Mm.
It's a different win.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw the emotional reaction, which Monet will put up for us in a clip the moment we speak about it. But tell me, take us through that quickly.
I think the look, lots of people would say you would prepare, and I think in my victory speech I also mentioned, like, look, I visualized and I saw the night before that I'm going to win. But up until the Saturday, there was obviously a lot of demons and stuff that you obviously have to overcome, and I think everybody wants to say, like, you just see it and you believe it and that kind of, but there's a lot more to that. The thing is, like, I definitely felt like that the night before. As the week progressed, it got better because I played better and I could obviously do it. And I, throughout the week, look, if I'd say a month previously, I was like still worried about Lesnier. I somehow need to play well in the last three events. Literally, I was checking where I'm lying on the order of merit almost every night. And people don't understand the reality of going back to qualifying and to get into the big events. So it wasn't this picture perfect, I'm seeing all the good stuff. But what I think what helped was I worked on stuff that made me feel comfortable and I hit it better. So I swung it better and I would say I could control the ball better. That's what made me feel like I can do it. Not because I woke up and I saw myself sitting with a trophy and whatever the case may be. But I think a lot of people, that's why I said like it was written in the stars also, because I've spent probably about 4 years when I started playing again. I moved to Joburg. And then Daneford was actually the club that I started playing at. So I spent lots of time at the diving range. And I worked on a lot of stuff in my swing, even in that time. Well, it's probably completely wrong, but I worked on stuff. And I spent a lot of time putting there, so I was very familiar with the greens. So I've made lots of putts that week that was just, I had knowledge of the golf course. And I knew where I could miss it, and I knew I had a better chance of it, of playing well. So I had, from a course management point of view, I knew, I think I played with Adriel, I played with him in the pits, and I said to him, if the one thing that I know this week is, I am going to be the best around the greens, because I've just chipped and putted there so much. And so I think that was to my advantage. But I've obviously worked on a lot of stuff in my swing, and I've been back and forth and working on different stuff too. And also, like, physically, I had to change stuff in my swing because I wasn't doing, physically, I wasn't strong enough. But that's, like, a normal occurrence. It's, like, I think lots of people would want to put it to one swing thought. There's no such thing. I think that's, like, the biggest load of bull. A swing thought only works for 1 week, and then you're back to square one. But I think what was nice is I had a chat with Garth Molnar, and I worked with him two or three weeks prior to the tournament, and I said to him, listen, I just want to do a
assessment
of where I'm at, what I need to do just to get my body physically moving a little bit better. And then I think the big question I asked him was like, do you believe in biomechanics? Is there a thing where if you are bolt a certain way, do you swing a certain way? And then he said to me 100%. And then I said, okay, let's roll with it. And then I said, okay, now at least I know there's certain swing characteristics about swing that I know that I swing. And I'm going to now, I don't care if it doesn't look right, though, but I know this is what I need to do for my swing. So, like, I had a lot more clarity on what I needed to do in my swing and how I can get the ball around the course, in a sense. And I think the one term that grates me the most at the moment and everybody speaks about is, like, you got to shallow out the club, which is nonsense. Look, I didn't do it and I won. And I just find, like, with that, the discussion on you got to be shallow and you got to hit up on it, and you can build equipment, Arthur would know. You can build equipment that'll match the way you swing. And I think that's just the everybody wants to be put in this bracket of this is what's right. And it's like, I love that video of Bryson DeChambeau. He posted something now about, like, you can't manually or consciously try and get the club moving this way. It's not something that you do. So I think there, to me, there was lots of stuff leading up in the background that got me saying, like, listen, I swing this way, this is what I do, and it made me feel comfortable. And that was probably how my week started, like, knowing that, look, okay, I have a nice warm-up routine. My body was moving a lot better. I was eating it better. And then also, like, the equipment thing. And I obviously changed balls. I still use the same equipment, but, like, the ball made a massive difference in shot dispersion and the way it reacted in the air, and I felt comfortable with it. And the crazy thing is, like, the week before, I'm not even joking, 15 snap hooks at Johnson Walkway. And I was the only person, and I think that's why I was, I think, like, a lot more emotional. I was, like, the only person that changing the ball, I knew it was the right thing to do. And I think in that time, everyone thought, like, I'm crazy. Because, like, nobody would want to do such a massive change before...
In season.
In season. And with all the... With such a big event also.
Yeah.
And I just said, like, even though I had, like, 15 snapbooks, I was like, I knew this is the best thing. I knew it's going to be better. Because when I hit it right and I strike it fine, I just wasn't aware of, like, the spin ratio and what I was doing. And I spoke to Arthur, like, even, like, with a club fitting point of view. And so there's so many, like, different stuff that I looked into and that helped me. But coming back to Dane Fun, obviously, that's all the stuff, like, kind of behind the scenes that everyone thinks is now just this one swing thought and you're ready to go. So there was so many different stuff that helped, and that was in my favor. Because I know the greens really well. I'm good. My short game is good. And there you literally just need something that you can get around with. And my driver that week was bold and was like kind of set up to like a strong 3-wood, which is perfect for the course because you don't need length. So you got to look at obviously a variety of stuff that obviously will help. So I was hitting all the fairways and I wasn't hitting it the longest, but I knew I could get it in play. So, and then as the week progressed, I obviously shot 8 under the first round. And it's funny, we spoke about it in the last podcast where my lowest I was 65. The most nervous I felt that whole week was the first round. Because I've been playing like my ass for 4 months. And I was like, subconsciously, I could feel my body was aware of what's happening. I was like, I'm shooting a good round here. I need to make a birdie. And I was like this. I was like, I walked down the fairway. I was like, can I keep my hands still? My hands were like this. I'm like, okay, I'm feeling it. But I'm saying, like, after the first round, I felt the most nervous or the most nerves throughout the whole week. Because it was something like, it's like a personal victory. Because I've now got a new ball.
Yeah.
I've got something. Got
a new lower score.
100% new low score. And I was myself. On the last hole. And I had a putt for a short putt. Man, like a short putt for birdie on the first day. And I didn't think it was, in the highlights. But a short putt like this. And I was like, and I could feel my hand like this. Because like, it meant something to me. Because I was playing so badly up until then. So I make the putt, obviously, shoot 8 under. And then that, obviously, just that's how the week started. And so I had good feelings and like, I had a sense that what I was working on was going to help me. And that's how the week started and got better. And then, funny enough, the second day, I obviously hit it fairly decent still. And the third day was a shocker.
Yeah.
And
I must be honest, I thought, oh, shit.
Yeah.
He's losing it a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it's like, the third day was shocking. And this is where it's like, it's quite, people will always say it's the swing, the new swing, or whatever the case may be that I've worked on. But I had 3 up and downs in the third round. That just kept me at 1 under, I think. And then, I think on the 15th hole, and this is where there's definitely an element of something's got to help in your favor for your week. So I hit this putt. And I think it was like 15. And I saw the funny enough, I saw the camera. Now I could see the way I reacted to the putt. I pushed it. I think it was on 15. So I pushed this putt, but I hit it hard enough. It was middle cup. The guy's like, yeah, that's a solid putt. I'm like, that is definitely not a solid putt. But I pushed it and it went in. And then I had a bit of momentum. And then I think I made 3 birdies in the last 3 again. In the third round or something. So there has to be moments where something happens and it's in your favor that week. And everyone has it. Lots of people have it. Because it's like you can see it in lots of guys when they're playing well. There's this moment where it's meant for you. But funny enough, it's like you obviously have the opportunity to take it. And then obviously it can go against. If you don't take that opportunity. So, and then I think... Obviously, also that I worked on, I felt a bit more comfortable. But like the break that I got, I think I got to the 10th. Now I started really well, and then I obviously now worked on my swing stuff, felt comfortable, and could see I could manage where the ball was going. that last day, I think it was like 5:09 or something. 4:09, excuse me. And then I literally had a putt for birdie. Now I had that line. I can hear that thing in my sleep. It's like a 2 meter putt up your left edge. And I was holding it well. But as I'm looking at the putt, I look up onto the leaderboard. Now the leaderboard like straight behind my putt. Then I look at this thing. And then it's now the last time I'm myself. Because then I realize, look, I'm leading actually. But
is
I
that the moment you realize?
But
so you don't have a caddy feeding you.
I didn't really. I didn't also want to know.
Yeah,
you don't want to know in the like midway through the first nine because you can lose it in the front nine based on knowing that information. But it's very crucial to know in the last couple of holes to see what you need to do.
I
put a foot on the gas? Do I just need to go home? Go home into the clubhouse at level par and you can manage the game, but you don't really want to know in the first nine, my personal opinion.
Yeah.
But isn't that a vulnerability in your own mind?
It's a mind game to you with playing with yourself, right?
I think the one thing that was difficult about that course is like if you know you're leading, the guys are going to make birdies. So now you're going to you want to do more where it's like you just got to just play like the way you, whatever you're doing is working, obviously. But it's like, when I got to that, though, now I looked at the score, I'm leading by one. Now I know me shooting level par is not going to be enough here. Because I was leading by one.
Making that birdie would be leading by two.
100%.
With 9 holes to play.
Now I freaking hit the putt, leave it a foot short. And then, the turning point. Then I make a bogey. Actually hit a bad tee shot and then it left. And then I could see, look, I'm a bit rattled now and... Then I made a good par on 11, and then 12, I literally hit the worst tee shot of the whole week. Blocked this thing 40 meters to the right. Now, it hits a tree on the perfect angle. Jock's playing with me. Goes all the way back in the fairway, 35
meters
back. So I've got, normally I have 10 to 20 in on that par 5. I had 270 in. To the green star. Now, so my girlfriend's there, and I'm waiting for the green. I was like, I just need to speak to someone now. Because my
head is crazy,
now.
Yeah.
It's not here at the moment. And so I went to have a chat to her, and I just said, look, I've obviously came so far now. It's obviously whatever happens now is dependent on these last few hours. And I just said to myself, listen here. And I think that was on the... But lots of the guys sent me a message and they said, obviously, they saw my reaction after I ate it. But I had to stay with it and I was like, come on, after I ate it. And I'm like, pull yourself together, whatever. Because I've done all the work I put on now.
Yeah.
I can't lose it now. I'm so close to it. And then I hit a great shot there. It's probably the best shot of the week. 3 wood. I make a 2-putt birdie. And then I still felt like it was okay, but still not comfortable. And then I think we got to 15 and I. As I'm walking up now, and in that moment, what was really nice, my girlfriend, Taylor, I have to mention it because she really helped a lot that week, is she said to me, you know what, you've played so well this week. It really doesn't matter where you end up. And I think that to me, as much as I didn't want to show it, I wanted to act like I'm the man, I can handle this, say. But on the inside, I was like, yeah, there's something in my throat. Or emotional.
Yeah,
it's a crop in my keel. But, and then, funny enough, after that, I said to myself, this is the last 3 holes. If this is the last 3 holes I'm playing for the rest of my life, I'm going to go out guns and blazing.
Yeah.
And, I'm hitting this part where I want. I'm going to hit it with the most conviction I can.
An intent.
100%. And I think Roger Vestas, I haven't spoken to him in years. And this is why I said, there's so many things where people take for granted. It's every discussion that you have with everyone.
Yeah.
That's
some stage.
That you need in that moment. And the first thing that came, I haven't spoken to Roger in 7 years. But what came up there is a winner needs conviction. And that's the one thing that came to me. It's I said, I need, when I go down here, act like I know what I'm doing, even though I don't feel like I
know. So R1 in circle.
R1 for this.
For this.
What's that? What did you just mention?
In FIFA, when you're shooting for goal, you've got the R1 in circle. It's like a little finesse shot. And we always joke about it.
Okay.
Mm. And then, yeah,
so you're not a FIFA man.
Yeah. But then I went there and I gave him my all in the last 3 hours. And I said, like, you know, if I don't win, it's also fine.
Yeah.
And I think I made it's probably the hardest thing, I think, as a professional golfer, when you're playing with guys that you do care about, and some guys that don't really care about you, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's lots of guys.
Reality that, of life.
Yeah, there's guys who don't really care, and it's but that's also fine.
Yeah,
because you need people like that in your life also to drive you and motivate you.
Yeah,
but like I literally, and I took it in a sense where it's like, you know, I can't really relax now and whatever. And like, with the question now was like, I had to finish with the best score possible. To give myself the best chance. And I also felt like that was, after I made the putt on the last hole, I was chasing, which helped a lot, where I felt like I needed to do something. And it's very hard to, when you're playing the last few holes, and it's like so frustrating when you see people say, like, somebody messed it up on the last hole and stuff. It's like just, it's like in rugby.
Yeah.
If the team's leading, everyone says, like, ugh, you just try and score another try.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so stupid because, like, the reality of it, you are leading.
Yeah, just don't lose it.
Yeah, everyone's like, yeah, you must go try and score another try. It's not that easy. It's like just in sports, if you're coming and if you're attacking, it's a lot easier to be in that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
So that stuff also makes, when you're leading a tournament, the actual reality of it is you can mess it up.
Yeah.
If you,
it's yours to lose.
100%.
Bryson on Sunday, let's be honest.
It's yours to lose.
So, like, the thing is, like, that's also, and I've had, like, some, not a lot of people know, like, Richie Ramsey, he plays on the European Tour. And I've chatted to him a few times. And he was also one of the guys that helped me up until this week, or up until Stella. And this is even crazier. Like, I played with him at the Johnson Workwear in the tournament, so he could see what I was doing wrong. And I could see this guy's obviously watching what I'm doing, and he's like, what is this guy doing? And but like afterwards, I phoned him. I took a week off, and we had a chat. He's like, I think this is what you need to do with the ball stuff. And he gave me some pointers and stuff that he felt like I, which is massive, because that's actually some of the stuff that what he mentioned, like even like the super thing that he mentioned was, it's like you swing it fast enough, you long enough. He's like, you don't have to chase distance. It's like a stupid, simple thing, but it's like you're a lot better off hitting the fairway than trying to hit a bomb it down there.
Yeah.
And it sounds stupid, but now people would think now it's a simple thing to think of, but it helped me, even in the last tournament at was it now in the Popo? It also helped massively. That it's like, I don't have to eat it. This guy can eat it 200, he can eat it 300. I'm quite happy with 290.
But that only switch can be ego. Can it be anything else?
Mm.
I mean, there's tactics to it, I understand it. But I also agree with you, when you get to a certain point in distance, how much more distance will make the course so much easier? Mm. So isn't it just amazing that with your experience in golf, that your ego still comes in?
Yeah.
But am I
a lot of people,
I don't want to lower it to nothing, but isn't that just ego? Or what's the reason you wanted to move on distance? Sorry,
I think a lot of people struggle to work on their own processes for themselves. It's very easy to watch your playing partners, whoever they are, let's call it a Vulcanine Arbor or this person, and you look at him and you're like, well, he's the same size as me, we built the same, but he's swinging at 120 miles an hour and I'm 115, but why?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. It's very hard to stay in your own bubble in this game.
100%.
Your eyes wander and your brain wanders.
Yeah, it's a fair observation.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's a fair observation. And it's also a thing of trying to get better and improve.
Yeah.
I mean, Dylan Fratelli went through it where he was all worried about club head speed and distance. Not so much anymore right now, but it's not an ego thing. It's just striving for perfection and, you know, trying to get better.
I'm not convinced that it's got nothing to do with ego. I'm not convinced.
Yeah, but but when you hit a 330-meter drive, you get a little semi.
There's no doubt.
You don't play this game for a living.
I understand that, but there's certainly some relatability.
No, but there is.
Because Rory went through it as well.
Yeah.
Rory, 100% was ego. 100%. He tried to justify it by course management. The courses are getting longer. But then I called into that because then I looked at the courses he was referring to. They didn't get longer. So it's
It's
golf for a while. He did. He bulked up. And to me, well, are you telling me Bryson had nothing to do with that?
Yeah,
of course Bryson triggered that response from Rory.
Listen, golf is an ego game, right? You need to get into this frame of mind that I'm the best and I'm this to obviously do well. I mean, you can't go play a round of golf and think I've got no chance in winning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's got to be an element of
that. I don't think that's got anything to do with ego.
No.
That's confidence, self-worth.
Correct, but you can look at it from different aspects. If I hit it 20 meters further...
Course
is a bit easier because now I'm not hitting a 7-iron, I'm hitting a 9-iron.
I'm about to call you out because when you do your club fitting videos on Dark Speed with Cobra, you mentioned before the time, like you were like, okay, I know the guys are going to chirp me about my club ape speed. Where I'm looking at, I'm going, are you hitting the ball very straight?
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful control. You do it 10 out of 10 times. Why? Who gives
But here's the thing, I've got, this podcast is not about me, but I used to be at a certain number club head speed, like a 115 person, and I have to take pre-workouts to get a 210.
Yeah, I'm not sure, are you an exception to the rule? Are you getting younger, or are we getting a little bit more mature? It doesn't mean we're getting physically weaker.
The one thing I always say to people, you can be physically strong, but you don't have, you're not hitting balls every day and practicing every day. Golf is a literally a muscle memory. Your body allows you to move faster based on repetition. Every person has that ability to go fast.
Mm.
But can your body and brain adjust to allowing you to get that fast?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that.
So... Oh, I've just lost wherever we were going.
But I agree with you in sentiment, and I think that's why amateurs get frustrated with it, because out of 18 drives, we're going to maybe hit, you know, two or three, really.
But it's also lacquer to hit a drive like 110%.
Look, I know.
There's no doubt.
There's definitely, look, as much as people don't want to say it.
Yeah.
Is, I played with Derek a lot, Derek Peterson.
Yes.
Derek's a big boy.
Yeah.
I can tell you now, we had a long dive competition in every hole where we played together. Even in tournaments, prep. But there's definitely an element, if when somebody is, you hit it past someone, like, I've got you.
Yeah.
There's definitely an element of, there's a bit of dominance. I am, because you definitely feel like this guy's got something over you. And whatever sense it may be, whatever you may call it, it does feel good.
Yes.
And when you clap it past someone. And I did a lot of training to swing it faster, but it's like, I think it's also valid because you got to be able to control it, which is a big thing.
Yeah.
That's, it's a switch.
And that is where distance definitely makes a difference. But you also don't want it to be to a where it will cause you to lose accuracy, or it will obviously bite you when you're playing a tournament. And I do feel like at times... I worked on speed stuff, and it did help on certain courses. But, yeah, coming back to obviously, like, what the winning thing was just, I think we spoke about so much stuff now, it was just, there was a lot of factors.
That brought it together.
That all put it together. And I think, and like Arthur now said, it's like, people want to put it to one thing, and a swing thought for the week. But it's like there's a lot of stuff that needs to come together for a good performance, not just now, but for whichever event comes up. There's a lot more contributing factors to a good performance.
I think the crucial thing is what he's saying is, as a professional golfer, sometimes you get lost in the process. So what I mean by that is, if you don't get the answers you need, like mentally and physically, you can't turn that switch on, that light on, because your answers are unanswered. Do you know what I'm saying? 100%. So you got a bit of answers from this person.
100%.
And there. And from a swing perspective, from a mentor perspective, from a trainer perspective, to answer the questions you needed to allow you to do what you needed to do.
100%.
If you don't go through that cycle or process, you'll get to the golf course, and because those answers are unanswered, you'll get lost with yourself.
100%.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's such a brutal game, because you're fighting against yourself
the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
And if, like Heinrich, for example, and he's a friend and I know this, and sometimes he searches for things that are not there, but if he doesn't search for those things and get the answers, he can't accept and move on. Makes sense.
Makes am I right? Sense, yeah. It's just,
am I right?
No, you're right.
Light bulb movie.
But look, over the weekend, I stumbled, and I don't know if it was me searching or you drew, but like real moments where it was lost. And you have to understand, I'm not talking from a professional perspective. I'm just challenging the two of you to say, his swing changed, his ball changed, all of the things that he thought with, his demons that he was fighting, the last three holes had to do with it. You needed to bring your brain and your mind together. You need a tailor to just give you that little bit of whatever words or whatever conversation you had 7 years ago. Yeah. Because at that point, if you are really now still worried about your swing and the ball, what the f*** are you doing then?
Yeah.
You just hear me out. Then I looked at Justin Thomas. I mean, Justin Thomas, we forget, Justin Thomas was in one tournament 7 shots ahead on the last day.
Yeah.
He f***ing lost it. It was an open. It was the US Open. If you go onto YouTube tonight, go and look at players losing or losing it at the end. You know, I mean, there was moments there where I forgot about those moments. Louis Oosthuizen is one of them. Louis Oosthuizen lost it on one of the just completely mentally lost it, and it was also on the last day. And I'll show you that clip. And where we're going with this is, I'm just saying that it's, we always say, when you look at the driving range of the tour starting, everybody's got a great swing. Mm. Not a single person is standing there, can't shoot a 64 and a 65 on their best day. Do we disagree on that?
No,
they all have the ability.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the one that's going to mentally and physically bring it together for that weekend, and not on the one day.
Mm.
Because we see it also now, even with the Springbok guys. You know what I mean? The Oaks do a Saturday, they're mentally broken. Then they have to play again. It's mentally. And every one of them, can you run 2 kilometers? Yes, everyone can. Can you take 17 scrums and be dominant? Yes, you can. But can you mentally dig so deep in the end where you hit that black, what do you call it in running? A black, you call it the black wall, I think. Where it's like, I just don't know how to run anymore. And then the comrades, it just happened now. When the two oceans happened now, the two oceans. They all have that ability. But then it's a mental block that just comes in. And the thing is, I and I'm not trying to be from a professional aspect.
Sounds like
here.
Coach Carter right now.
maybe. But we just know it. And the thing is, now, just to take the emotions out of it, and sorry, we're not making this about me and Arthur here this morning, is the data says it to us.
Yeah.
The data says it to us. Mm. Everybody's got that capacity and ability. It's the one that keeps it together for those 4 days.
100%.
And for me, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, no, at the end of the day, it does. But I think there's one... I think there's one thing that a lot of people, and this is what one word that I hate that people use. I hate it strongly. Is when a guy says, or somebody comes to you, yeah, you need to be confident this week, or I need some confidence for this week. Now, I promise you, from my experience and the bit that I play golf, it's not confidence. It's you're either competent to do something, or you can't.
Not. Yeah.
And the thing is, like,
fair one.
I promise you, Arthur would know. They, if I had to now take on, come and take Emir for you. If I go now to the diving range and we hit 20 balls and we say, like, let's see who can hit it the straightest, he'll beat me.
Yeah.
So I need to obviously prepare and get better at driving it straighter. Because I know if I have a tight tee, I might not be able to hit the shot.
Yeah.
So, like, in golf, I think that's why it's like a personal battle, because you know what mistake you have. And unfortunately, when you're under pressure, when you play a tournament, it it kind of doubles the anxiety or the feeling when you have that shot.
And that miss becomes from there to there. Yeah,
that 4 foot becomes a 10 foot.
And the thing is, like, I'm generally a good pitcher, and I won't forget it. I played a tournament, and I think it was at Swaziland. Funny enough, with your own club. So I've been talking about pitching for some other reason. I think my bounce, my wedge is a bit too low. So played well the whole week. On the last though, I think it was the ninth though, I said to my, it's downwind. Now I'm like, just lay yourself up to a distance where you can hit like a full shot in.
I've done that.
So I hit this 4-iron or 5-iron pearl, and now it goes around the bin. Now I gave it a little draw, so now it's going to roll extra. So it rolls all the way around the water. Now I'm like,
now you've got like 85 in.
What did I just do? 75 on the number. I still remember it like clearly. I gave it a little thin to win into the palm trees at the back. But I left myself the shot that I was struggling with. And I think now it's like maybe a simple way of putting it. But in golf, the shot that you fear the most, you will have it in the tournament.
In that specific tournament, I was also finishing on the back nine, on the front nine. And I think I was about 4 or 5 under that nine, like coming back to make the cut. I had a shock of the first day. Talking about that distance, okay? Now, my gapping and my wedges was a bit off with the shafts and stuff like that.
Missed a short game himself.
Yeah, but it wasn't a short, it was a full shot into it. Yeah. And I think I had 110, and which I hit my sandwich 115, but it, again, the shaft or the bounce or something was out for that week, different surface. And I was too scared to hit a soft gap wedge because I'm worried about flying the green. And I caught it a tad heavy.
Splish, splash.
Missed by one.
But I'm saying, it had
to have happened. And I was cruising momentum. I wasn't like panicking about water. I was now. I don't have the shot in the bag 100%. To pull off.
Yeah.
Now, do I go for the softer one? Go long with my adrenaline was pumping, or do I ride the adrenaline and just hit a good swing and it will get there? But that 10% of hitting it a little heavy is there because it's on a little upslope, and it happens. It catches you.
Like, that's why, like, the competency, being able to do something is like, and it's like if you ask anyone that is a professional athlete or whatever, and you can, and I always tell the guys, if you look at a simple way, maybe now if you look at rugby. Somebody kicking at the poles now.
Money to book. World Cup. I think there's no better.
Yeah. So you can see there's obviously like, look, I don't even know anything about technical stuff in rugby, but you obviously can see the way it comes into the ball is more from an angle. So I don't even know, obviously, but I know it's like, if I do have to kick the ball, I'll be more on this side because I want to see
where... And the ball looked a bit skew.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, in putting, you don't really want to go too far away from it. But anyways, I'm on a kicking coach, so I don't really know anything about rugby. But I'm saying, like, if you had to ask a rugby player or fly off to say, and this is why golf is like, it's a lot more sensitive. It's like, if you had to tell a guy, you must kick it over the poles and it must only fly a certain distance, then you'll see a massive difference in
for sure.
In kicking accuracy.
You're not allowed to hit it past a certain percent.
I promise you now, when you take off speed in a sport, where it's high, like in the golf swing, I promise you, take off 5 yards and of a golf shot.
Yeah.
People don't understand under pressure how it feels. It's like it's like a completely different feel, and you got to be a lot more calmer while you do it. Yeah. So, but again, like that is stuff that you, and like again, Richie, we spoke about how can I take off a few yards from hitting a half a shot.
Yeah,
and it's like I had to move my ball. I had to do different stuff for me.
Yeah,
I had to move the ball forward and hit it higher.
I think that it's definitely what separates the professional level, because what I realized when we talk rugby and golf, you guys, firstly, the shots they show us, like even somebody like you, which got some nice coverage on Stella, you just make it look easy, you know. But the pressure, the decisions, the whole thing, everything that's in your mind, it's a lot going on. And to me, it hit me again in this face that even at the level that... They're the number one performing team in rugby in the world. They have seen all of it. There's no team that's seen worse, have gone into dark corners. We've lost to Japan with the most... They've seen it all. But still, the pressure of the moment. And if you look at money, it's exactly what it came down to. I bet you, and I can't, but I bet you he was converting those kicks like nothing before the game. I bet you with all my, no way they gave him the ball even to kick the, if he can't kick over
even
the
in the last year, his stats was very good.
Was very good.
He was ERC top point scorer.
But then Jacques came in there and he said, listen, if you haven't been to a quarterfinal, you don't understand it.
If you've never led a tournament with nine holes to play.
But this is exactly what I'm saying. And that's why you guys are professional. Because I like the way you compacted it by saying, I go back to my ability, my competency to execute 100%. This. And that's the structure that you have. It's only your mind that's with you. But you go back to, I can pull this off. And it's the same thing for Arthur. And I'm not saying, I'm not challenging any of this. I'm just saying that Swaziland that you hit over, I bet you right now, put you on a driving range before the time and say hit that shot. So you will do it 10 out of 10 times or 9 out of 10 times, right?
But you don't have the shake and bake.
But you don't have the shake and bake. You don't have the shake and bake. And that's why I love the amateur golf, and what, you know, that's the world that I live in, where I love the fact that the Oaks are putting competitions and some pressure on the boys, because it is when you can talk an Oak out, and who knows the best of that? Scott Brits.
The one thing,
that thing can talk you out of, I mean, he hit him, he talked him into a shot I've never seen him take off. He hit me into a push on the copper leaf on the last one. He literally talks to me, goes, I see your misses are always on the left, huh?
And then he tried to hit it right and he snaps it, that thing so bad. And there's Skalk laughing in the background.
You know? But sorry, Andrich, I know we've done it.
No, that's fine. But it's like also, if you look at, funny enough, now, look, I watched a lot of the last bit of the IB. But I think from a mental point of view, if you would say the perfect example of mindset that you need in those moments would be the interview that Andre Pollard gave in the semifinal.
So true.
Where that was the definition of the way you should see things.
Yeah.
Because I said, I think I posted like the whole week, I was like, my name is Heinrich Pollard. In the World Cup. I said, my name is Heinrich Pollard. Because when he said in the semifinal, where he said, like, this is the moments that I've prepared for.
My whole life.
100%.
Yeah.
And I remembered that, like, and I was like, yo, that is like the perfect example, because he's trained to obviously be able to do it. And mentally, in that moment, he's embraced it. And that is like, obviously, and it's not easy to do, obviously, but like, he's a post when he said that. That's why I was like, on the story, I was like, this is a guy, just give him the ball, he's going to do the job, I don't even care about whatever. But he was obviously, he was competent enough, and he's done it before.
Yeah.
But also like, that interview for me, when he said that, I was like, you won't get anyone that'll be, would have a better approach by when he said it. And the thing is, like, also, like, to say it on live TV.
Yeah.
Now I must know.
Yeah.
You're going to have the same responsibility again coming up.
Yeah.
And he delivered the goods. Mm. Yes, that guy's a champion. Yes,
the whole thing, I mean, I tell you what, the whole World Cup and the whole, this whole Springbok squad and sport, it's just, it's so untapped. And I think that the Sunshine Tour, you know, because often I speak about it a lot, the Sunshine Tour, Thomas App, they've done miraculous things. It really, it's a, not miraculous, I mean, I think I'm being overdramatic.
Amazing things.
But they've done some amazing things. But I must be honest, I feel the drama is missing a little bit, because there is drama on the Sunshine Tour. They don't bring us in enough into it. We want to see rivalries between players. We want to, you know, I want to be more invested in the winner for the Sunshine Tour. But the, do you still love golf?
Sure. It's funny enough, I wouldn't say, like, when I started playing golf, I didn't really enjoy that much, to be honest. But I think when I played longer, I could appreciate it a lot more, because I could see there's a lot more factors, and I've personally learned a lot about myself, and because there's so much stuff that's like, you can, look, I think when I'm at home, and I speak to my mom, my dad, and my sister, and my brother, they always say I'm philosophical and whatever the case should be, but it's like, there's so much stuff that you can relate to on the golf course that happens in real life. And look, the one thing that I always find, like, it's weird and funny is that, look, you get guys that are not the best example for sports and stuff, but nothing bad really happens to them. And it's like, even in golf, you can hit a bad shot and you can get a good result. So there's so much stuff that happens on a golf course where you're like, how did that even happen? And you literally, at certain stages, and I think that's why a lot of people get addicted to golf, is like, it doesn't matter how hard you try. If something bad is going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's like being able to accept the bad that happens. It's and the crazy thing about it is like, you could have done everything in your preparation, and you could have done everything that you could have in that week, but you can still miss the cut by one. And you could have actually hit it exactly the way you wanted.
Yeah.
There's only two things. You weren't good enough, and it also didn't go in your favor.
Yeah.
But like, there's a, and I think that's why like golf is like such a, it's, it taught me a lot. And I think the older I got, the more I appreciated it. Because in the beginning, I just thought like, I'm hitting a ball. It's not really, there's nothing, there's not anything to it. And then you can obviously go down the rabbit hole by wanting to understand everything about the swing and that stuff. And that's like, you can, it's such a crazy discussion because everyone's got an idea on what they, what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And again, it's like me and Arthur, we always speak about the, you got to know what you do.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can repeat something that's wrong and you repeat it over and over, it's going to work. Even if it's the wrong thing, you can still...
I think that's, Scotty Scheffler has mastered that so well with regards to that. Sticking to know what he knows from that perspective. And also, I think he's one of those golfers, if he wins or not, he doesn't care. Mm. Yes, he enjoys winning, 100%. But it's not the everything for him at the end of the day. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think.
No, I think that's why people fear him.
Yeah.
They don't fear him for his swing or his shovel.
No. That his perspective to the game is unreal.
Mm.
And that's so hard because a lot of other guys who play golf want to win so badly and want to play the Ryder Cup
Spieth. They, to me, fall completely in that category.
Yeah,
they purely chase the...
They want to win.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of benefits with coming for win, but he's in that... maybe it's because he's won so much that it's... doesn't matter if he misses a cut or wins.
I just agree with you. But I think you're missing the big element here. It's faith.
100% faith.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. 100%
faith. I know the element, what the element is, but what I'm trying to point out is that he is the best at doing that.
Mm.
He's not... so many guys get obsessed in this game that they forget about the other stuff outside perspective. 100%. Your family, your kids, your faith... the normal things around you, you know what I'm saying? Where he's so unbelievable. It's ridiculous.
And I would say differently if it wasn't like that from the beginning, because before he was even somebody, he was there.
Mm.
If he won, he won. He pays his bills, he pays his bills.
Mm.
He wasn't all of a sudden, now he's got money in the bank account, I can retire, now I'm there. Mm. He was there from day one. There was only another person in this, no, I want to say, but, you know, there was another person to me that stood out in that same way. Tiger, everybody knows it. He was chasing his own personal goals on the day. Oh, I happened to win the Masters. Oh, I happened to win the Open. And then there's the famous interview where they asked him, and he was like, oh, I just didn't want to make a bogey. To me, that is playing a game by yourself within a game.
Yeah.
So 100%. I'm just here to challenge myself. If the result is at the end, I'm going to win.
He's also playing against himself, 100%.
120%. Yeah. And to me, that's what scares me about Scotty Scheffler. I feel we're in for quite a boring phase in golf with him because he's not the most excitable guy. And I mean that with, I'm a huge fan.
But it's only because of the GOAT. The GOAT has set the bar so high that...
Big T!
Yeah.
The GOAT. You understand? Like, it's...
And the goat's still make the cut, boys. That's not the goat with his one leg, hoppy, and they're still taking out all the youngsters.
100%.
It's going to still take Scotty Scheffler a couple of years to get to Tiger's level if he carries on the way he's carrying on.
Yeah.
And we are so used to Tiger that we crave that Tiger drug. If we're watching it, you know what I'm saying? And it's a lifetime of moments that he's created.
The thing, like, with even what you now said about Tiger when he played a tournament in a tournament. And it's like, ugh, I read that book, Big Miss.
Yeah.
I didn't read it,
yeah.
I listened to the audio. But it was crazy. He worked with Hank Haney, and Hank Haney was like so relieved that Tiger won his first tournament with him. And Hank was like, yo, I can't wait now. We're going to celebrate, and Tiger's going to send me a message. Tiger sent him a message saying, listen, yeah, I don't like the shot that I hit on 15 or 14, whatever all it was. Can I see you tomorrow on the driving range? But I'm saying, like, that's now next level of...
Yeah.
Because that's obviously, like, it's just a different breed.
Yeah.
That's why I think he definitely didn't play just for winning a tournament. There's like,
no, he was
chasing his own thing.
He was chasing his own perfection.
And I saw that thing, I was like, he's like, don't, I think somebody posted about it, like, don't get bitter, get better.
Yeah.
I think that's what he now recently mentioned or something.
He did, yeah.
And I really like that so much, because the one thing that I think it made Tiger different from most athletes was everything that happened in his life, he took full responsibility for. And I felt like for me, a lot later in my life also, like, look, you always try and find an excuse to say, this is why I'm not doing something, or he, in so many interviews, he would say, like, listen, yeah, this wasn't good. And it will be very short. People would think that he's now being, he's not saying enough, but it's for him in his head, he didn't execute, he didn't do what he wanted. And I could relate a lot to in the last bits more than ever, where it's like, I think what helped me just the last month or so was like, I said, look, I'd rather take responsibility for where I am and say, like, listen, I've moved out so much in the order of merit. Okay, but now what can I do now to get back? And I think, like, with so many things, even at school and stuff, it's like, literally, if you could say, it's because I did this is why I'm in this situation, you'd be far better off.
Yeah.
Because I've had lots of times where, it's now a simple scenario where it's like, I would miss the cut, and then I would speak to friends, family, whatever, just to relax. It's the worst advice you can give someone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's honestly the worst advice.
Or no, you'll do it next time.
100%.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he's laughing on and on because he knows. It's like, and the thing is, like, and
I'll say it was comforting words.
But it's also hard to get the message across the page, because I don't expect... You're obviously very sensitive because you don't want to hear now something bad. You don't want to say, listen, you idiot, you messed it up. Now you're going to be sensitive about it. But I'm saying, like, if you take responsibility for what you've done, that's when you can change it. And I always, my experience of on the Sunshine Tour to somebody that's gone on to the PJ Tour was Garrick. And I think it's like 6-7 years ago. We played at Zambia, and I think we were quite similar in the order of merit. And I think I missed a cut by 2 or so. I didn't really play great. And then I was like, well, I'm in Zambia now, I might as well do something. I went out, felt like shit the morning when I woke up. But I've still got the snapbook in the pocket for next week. So I've still got the problem. But I went out now, I went to go celebrate. I don't know what I was celebrating. So I went to a party. Garrick also missed a cut that week in Zambia. And then I woke up the morning, now I'm cruising, now I'm laughing, I'm telling the guys, yeah, I've got a headache. It was a great night out. And then I saw Garrick, he was there with his golf bag in shorts, going to the diving range.
Yeah.
It's the most defeating feeling ever.
Yeah, I can imagine.
To miss a cut.
You judge yourself there, but
to miss a cut, now you're in Zambia.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
There's nothing to do. So I took it in my sense, well, I'm going to have a few dops, and then I'm going to feel better, I'm going to sleep in. But I didn't look at the fact that I just missed a cut.
Yeah.
Why did I miss it?
Yeah.
What did I do wrong? What can I do this week to make it better?
For next week.
Even a youngster like that could inspire, huh?
And then I looked at him in that time, and something I always remember, and it's like, because I was there, and he went to go practice, and I think it was about 3-4 months after that he won. And I think, like, in that time, it was like kind of sit with me, because, like, very similar
hear what you're saying.
Results in the last few tournaments. I could have maybe have done the same stuff, but I chose a different route. And that's what I'm saying, like...
Drowning your sorrows.
100%. I was running away from the problems that, yes, that is actually stuff that I need to look at and I need to work on. So, but I think, like, that to me, what's nice about, like, the whole Tiger thing is, like, he's always took ownership for what he wanted to do and where he was going. And even in interviews, it wasn't 16 wins, it's like 20 wins. It was never just about this one tournament or what I wanted to achieve. So I think just from my experience in the last, especially what helped me this week, is like I, wherever I am and wherever I go from now, I'll take responsibility for where I do end up and what I work on, and swing wise, what I take full responsibility for, what even the bad results also for the next few events.
Yeah.
You've been going through a lot of swing changes in the last year or 2 years. The timeline is probably wrong for me, but talk to us about that experience and why you went down that road. Was it the right road that you went traveled down? And just give us a detailed explanation of that, because it's a complicated explanation, I know. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel like there was a lot of searching, maybe for some answers and stuff, but talk to us about that.
Yeah. I think that I saw a guy's fan called Adam, and we worked on the ACK motion. So it's a thing that you connect to your wrist and stuff. Yeah. So obviously,
Swiss product.
It's awesome, eh? Like, but you got to understand it. And the thing is, like, obviously, initially, what I thought I needed to do was obviously change to a different pattern in my swing. And I did it. And I practiced my ass off, and it kind of helped. And then, but I could see my body took strain because I can't move like that. I don't move like that. So that's why, like, I tried that stuff, and I obviously worked on my swing and to do it. And I had a few good results, but I still could feel like, listen, you know, this is so against what I generally do. And I had an ankle issue. Then my hip was sore, and then my knee was sore, and it was. Like, and then I had like an issue with my lats. I was like, everything's falling apart. So, and I think like I saw a guy in Cape Town, Eric Klein, and I saw
Eric Klein.
I saw him, and we
very technical coach.
He was the guy that actually introduced me to the biomechanic stuff.
Yeah.
The
swing stuff. So Swing Catalyst. The X3 technology from FlightScope.
100%.
And then the biomechanics that he uses. Yeah.
So you do all the measurements to see how you should grip the club.
We've gone through it.
And I've done it with Arthur, actually. And I literally studied all that stuff. And I watched seminars on it. There is so much truth in it.
Yeah.
That actually the way that your body is built, it's how you swing.
Yeah.
And if I had to actually, if I had to give someone a good lesson, I would actually take someone's measurements now and ask you, look, what do you do? And the one thing that I've learned now, and I'll make it probably cut it short from a swing point of view, it's taken me 20 years to obviously learn it. And people would say it's wrong, which is the craziest thing. Is like, I'm 178. My wingspan is 192. So my arms should move up a little bit higher in the golf swing just to give myself space, which makes sense. So the more I move my arms more flatter, the club,
stuck.
100%. So the club's going to be too far behind me. So I need to create space by actually getting my hands more in front and upper. So connection does not exist for me. And everyone speaks about connection. Now, check the guys in the diving range. Connection ball, give it the...
yeah.
Stay connected. But it's like the... So there's lots of stuff that you work on in your swing. And again, now somebody with that works in connection can work on it, but then the arm length has to match what the body can do.
Yeah.
So there's lots of guys in the swing stuff. And the crazy thing is, like, if you look at someone like Sergio, it's like, and I said to Eric about it, like, Sergio is one of the few guys that actually do shallow the club. He's of the few people in the world where his forearm is shorter than his humerus. So the thing is, like, with that part, with the club, always lag more this way. because he's built like that. So his club will move like that without him doing anything. Is it Gerrard the other day? Same thing. He gives it a whoosh, on the inside. He doesn't even try and do it. And now everyone teaches everyone the same thing. And it's like, well,
get connection.
Now I must remember. This part of my arm is a bit longer. So now the more I go shallower, I'll go 7 or 8 degrees on the inside. Just for the way that I'm built and stuff. So, look, there's a lot of technicalities and stuff, and like you can go in the rabbit hole. And then ball speed is a big thing. And I went on this thing now, I needed a few shots the other day. Like, it was 2 days ago, I went at the pro shop. I ate balls. And I did a test to see, okay, I'm doing what everyone said I'm supposed to do. I'm going to shallow this beast, I'll get it shallow. I think my ball speed on my driver, 168. Which is shocking for my speed. Okay, so there's no ball speed on it. Drop the arms up a little bit in the air, more in front of me. 174. 6 miles per hour difference in ball speed.
Massive.
6 times 3, 18 meters.
In the space
meters.
Of a minute.
So, again, you just got to be so careful when it comes to swing stuff. And I had to do this massive loop to get to a point where I know. And
what's right?
100%. So I know what I need to do a bit better. And if I look at some people, I can say, like, you're in trouble. It's not going to get better. But even, like, the grip stuff is, like, how many people grip the club wrong? It's like crazy.
Just from that comment, Albert's going to grab a club here and say,
I promise you. Like,
no, but it makes sense what you're saying. Yeah. But also, what's hitting me is technology has driven us to that point. Because technology wasn't there to capture that data point.
Correct.
Plus, that's why this. In fact, actually, it's hitting me. So that's why club fitting has always served a purpose. We know for a fact that the pros get adjusted. There's nothing standard in most pros' respect. I want to say 99%. That any club you can just buy off the shelf. So they obviously have the technology access to allow them to identify these weaknesses and make the clubs work around it. And I think that's why I always tell people that when you fitted 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the development of technology where it is today is going to identify points and weaknesses you didn't even know about. The other day, something as simple, my arms are extraordinarily long compared to other people. When I'm, you know?
And
I live in this world.
But you're not super tall, but he's got Neanderthal arms. You two should have been boxers.
Yeah, I think I'm 187, and then I've got arms that are 185, but your arms, my arms are like a droppy, you know, past my f***ing knees almost.
Yeah, short legs.
Where he was like, what clubs are you playing with? How can you never consider your arms that's longer? Where I stand to a guy that's taller than I am.
You need shorter clubs,
because your arms are close to the ground.
Yeah, then I stand next to a guy that's taller, and my arms go lower than his.
Yeah.
So I'm like, people, this is not to fit you to look fancy and beautiful, you know.
Stroke your ego.
The thing is, like, also, like, with that stuff, is like, also, I went to the range. Now, there's a guy, Terry Rawls, and Mike Adams. They're the guys that actually invented this stuff. Now, I wish I could have a conversation with those guys, because I think the stuff that they speak about is phenomenal. It's like literally next level stuff. So listen to this one thing on Spotify about their roles, and they speak about, they've done tests now, and I've hit plenty, many balls, and I went to go try it, and just to see how my body reacts and stuff. And like, they've done a study to show, like, the biggest contributing factor to the way your body moves is your grip.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a
central
point.
And now you get a guy, now you must remember how hectic this is. You change your grip, or you change your body movement, but you got to change your grip also then. And the thing is, like, that's our entry-level information. But I promise you now, like, the stuff that they've showed and how your body responds to the ground and stuff, according to your grip, and, like, lateral movement and that stuff, there's so many factors. And it's like, I can literally, if I stand in the course now, if I check a guy's grip, I'm like, okay, I can see why he's starting. But not that I'm saying it's an easy fix, because you still got to practice.
That's one of the hardest fixes to do, is grip changing.
100%. But there's massive, like, there's just a lot of stuff. Coming back to what we said, it's like knowing yourself, knowing what you need to do better.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that I wish I didn't have to learn and go through so I can understand it. But, like, man, I did, I ate so many balls and tried so many different things. And everyone was like, what are you on? And I was like, well, I'm trying to figure out what is going on. Because I know, like, there's even strike location and stuff. And, like, but that's, like, the one part of it. And then you can go equipment. Yeah, the equipment's the next level thing. Because, like, the idea of it in the last was, like, I literally thought, and this is so easy, like, with a driver, for example. And it's frustrating because it's, like, I've been playing professional for 17 years. You can change strike location by doing this, but then also the lie angle determines obviously where you strike it. But now you open the face, but you actually strike it where it's going to hook it.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you about gear effect.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about weight distribution in the head of the club also. Because like more weight back keeps the head more passive. More head weight, less gear effect.
Yeah.
Everyone is like, swing it, let's make the club lighter, swing it faster. Bigger gear effects. So it's like this day is, again, like I had to learn lots of stuff and I never really speak about that stuff because it's like such a, it's a long,
it's a rabbit hole, yeah.
100%. But like I know now, if I have a discussion with somebody on the swing stuff and like, funny enough, I would never even go as far to start off with what do you work your swing. I would ask a guy what ball you're using. And then you're like, okay, if you use a ball that spins a bit less, does your equipment match it? Because, like, with the equipment, it's, like, crazy. I did something this. I changed my loft of my irons after the ball that I used, literally also the week before. So the amount of stuff that there is in golf that you can change, it is phenomenal.
And it's overwhelming.
But what frustrates me more than ever is, like, the... It's just that coaches should be a lot more careful for the information that they give. And I think...
And not everything works for everyone.
And I must say, like, and I hope Doug watches this video, Doug Wood, he is one of the guys that I've seen at the range where he's worked with so many guys where you would give people different information according to what they do. And I've spoken to Garth, and obviously they've got a discussion, and I absolutely love the fact that they'll speak about different stuff. When I see a guy that has the same swing guide or
pattern,
same swing thing for everyone, then I look at him like, well, I'm happy you found somebody that suits your model, but that's not a good golf coach to me.
Yeah.
It's somebody that says, like, okay, what's your ball flight? What's your tendencies? What do you want to do? How do you want to move? What ball flight do you like? Make it personal about what you want to do. And like Peter Moorman is a great example of that because like Doug worked with him. I saw they worked on obviously not changing his swing even, but like working with the draw. Everybody now is like, you have to hit it left to right, which is stupid because like if you look at the ball flying, it can either go this way or it can go that way. It goes to the same point. It's preference on how we're going to get to the hole.
Yeah.
And like that's what I like because like lots of the guys would say, no, the best way to do is hit it left to right.
Hit a tiger fade.
Yeah.
Tiger fade. If I hit a tiger fade where it's a dog to the left, I'm taking out every tree on the left.
Oh.
So just with that kind of stuff, it's like such a crazy thing. But like with Doug, when I saw with the players that he's worked on, it's never been like the same thing over.
Yeah.
And I've seen lots of guys in the diving range, and I could just check, okay, well, you're part of that. And again, it doesn't mean that I know everything. I'm the furthest person to know everything. It's like, I'm a student of golf, and I'm always willing to learn, but like, I'm trying to learn more about what I need to do.
Yeah.
And like, when you have a coach and a fitter, mental coach, and a golf coach, they need to make you better as a person.
Yeah.
Because the way you sign your autograph and stuff, make it look neat and make it the best it can be. I can't swing like you. You can't swing like me.
Yeah.
So I can't go copy someone else. And again, you can see it even on the PGA Tour. If you look at the guys.
The Masters this weekend. 17 I looked at that thing swings. On the
PGA Tour.
Yeah.
The top 25 guys that got the card. Not one guy's got technically a good swing.
Yeah.
Not one guy on that thing. I was like, I couldn't believe it.
I mean, Christo Lambrecht is weird, eh? I love him, but what a weird swing.
Yes, sir. I saw our father guy hit that ball 18.
Sure.
Leopard.
Leopard Creek. Wow.
But I just want to give you, there's a couple of things, but if you don't mind, I just want to finish off by asking you. You've obviously got a lot of people behind you. Any specific mentions or thank yous?
Yeah. I think there was, again, like, I would have to say everyone.
Yeah.
I would say, like, I would go to Ford, says Dr. Plattner. He was the first guy that sponsored me and helped me. And I was part of the Ernie Asafaker Foundation. Then it went on. When I was injured, my mom and my dad was there for me. They made sure that I was okay. Nobody really cared about me in that moment. I lost my sponsorship. No one was there. And they were, every day, like, are you okay? I'm in bed. I didn't have to do anything. They literally looked after me every day. For 6 months, I was in bed, like, I couldn't do anything. So they played such a massive role in that time where I needed support. And then when I started playing, obviously, I had Stephen Craig was the first guy that sponsored me or helped me on the Sunshine Tour. And then I think, like, obviously, like, a lot of more people has been interested, a lot more interested now. And Denzel October, he's also joined and he's also part of the team. So there's a lot of people that's more involved. But again, like, Rian Spannenberg, he's always helped me with woods.
Yeah.
Louise from Strixen, they helped me with equipment for the last 15 years, 20 years, 15, 17 years with Strixen. So there's so many people that I can mention. Like, and everyone's played a role. Langley Perrins from Global Golf, he's always, like I said, like, whatever you need, we can help. Even at the times when I was not playing great, he was also there. So there was a lot of people that was like part of me as a brand that helped me. So I never, even like when I did my interview, when I won, I never made it about someone specific. I don't really like it because there's
so many your hands,
so many people involved. But what I did say was the people behind the scenes are a lot more important than those that get recognition.
Yeah.
And they should know sincerely from me that I care a lot more about you supporting me while I'm going to the gym or while I go practice than when I've achieved an accolade as winning a tournament.
Yeah.
And I think
that makes sense.
The big thing for me, the big thing for me is, like, you want people that's on your side when you're doing the work, when you've achieved nothing. It's like so easy to get people to, like, oh, I'm so proud of you, whatever the case may be. And it's always nice to speak. Like, even Arthur, like, you might not feel like it, but, like, even now earlier I spoke to him about where does the strike location go if you go upright? He's like, in the year, I'm like, thank you, nasty. But you see, like, that's going to help me going forward. So, like, just from I appreciate the people in my life a lot more. They support me when I do the ordinary basic stuff. Because, like, everyone gets recognition when you've achieved something on a big scale or on live TV and stuff. But, like, having the honorable mention in that speech should not be the most important.
Yeah.
Or should not be the thing that you should refer
to. The be-all or end-all.
100%. It should be knowing that for those who I'm close to and the people that I know very well, it's like, I'm going to be a nice person towards you because I care about what you do in your own personal space. And I think that, to me, I think that's why everyone was like kind of rooting for me, because I genuinely care about everyone and I want the best for everyone. And I think I've never really mentioned this to anyone, but it's like when I grew up playing golf, it was the one sport where you would always get compared to someone else. And it was the most frustrating thing for me. And the thing is, like, with golf, somebody else will always beat you on a day. So you can't base how you feel on what somebody else has done. And again, it's like coming back to what I need to work on and what I need to do is, like, you need to obviously spend the majority of your energy on focusing on what you need to do. And that, to me, I think it took me a lot longer than I expected. Because I can tell you one thing for sure. Like, when somebody says something towards you, we're human and we do feel sensitive towards someone saying you're messing up or whatever.
That's going to happen.
But that to me was hard, because when I played sport, like junior golf and making the SA teams, you will get a message from somebody that you cared about saying that, how can you let this guy beat you? But I'm like, I shot one under par. I've done everything that I could in my own personal capacity and space to make sure that I've got better. And you actually got better. But now you've taken away from that person's journey of learning and improvement. Yeah. And playing on tour, there's too many people would have just bad things to say about you. Where you're actually moving in the right direction. And unfortunately, I don't even tell people, and I speak to people, it's like, if somebody sends me a message, you've missed a cut, or I hope you make the cut, or whatever, I was like, I don't even respond to the message. Because whenever somebody speaks about the cut, it shows how little you know. Because when somebody says you must make the cut, in essence what it means is like, you must finish 60th. That's your goal for the week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
You're good enough for 50th.
So if somebody says, like, I'll be making the cut, I'm like, okay, thank you. That's why I don't listen to what you say. And then when it comes to like a performance stuff, it's like, if I've missed a cut and I've improved, I feel 100% fine missing the cut. Plenty of time. And I think lots of people are like, found like, yeah, this guy's acting like nothing happened. But at least I know, like, I've moved in a direction of what I needed to. So, again, like, that is just like the
philosophy side of yours.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to professional sport, just in general, it's like finding people that are supportive of what you do, regardless when you're playing good or bad.
Yeah, I think I will end on that by saying, I think the message there was very beautiful, what you said there about the honorable mentions. It's very relatable. I've never thought about it that way, Heinrich, where it's the people that's with you on the range that goes through the healing process or something gets injured. Those are always there permanently. Somebody like Taylor. And only when the shine comes on the Sunday, you know, does everybody want to make a big scene about it. I really like what you said there, and we appreciate your time here today. We hope you make the cut on the next.
There we go. That's fun.
But we do wish you all the well, and all the sponsors and everybody that's involved with you, and to all the Sunshine Tour and everybody that's playing, all the professional players. We love you guys. It's something that we relate to. It's something that we want to enjoy. And all we're trying to do here is spurge a little bit of conversation around golf. Arthi, from your side?
Sure. I enjoyed the conversation today. Good friend. We've worked a lot together over the past 3 years, which is nice. He gets my brain going at times, asking me these technical questions with golf equipment, which is actually fun to go dive deep into. But what an unbelievable human being.
Yeah.
Not just saying that to your face now, but, you know, whether he never has anything bad to say about anyone. He's always willing to help. And I just wish the best for him always. So, yeah, well done on the win.
Thanks, Arthur.
Thank you. Was very cool to see. And let's get them snowboarding.
100%, yeah.
Not make the cut.
100%. 100%, yeah.
Bless you, and thank you so much, Heinrich.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. That was awesome. Thanks, Arthur. Yeah. Thanks, Albert.
Pleasure.
And, if you guys need me for anything, I'll come work in the background.
Oh, God, needs a new regripper.
No, you can be my product specialist on new shafts.
Yeah.
Test out all the new shafts.
But just Eric Klein, shout out to you. I'd like you to put him in the post as well. He's an incredible guy, the human, and the time and effort he puts into golfers like you. He's been doing that his whole life, even when he wasn't the name that he is today. So I'm so glad you mentioned him today. I've got a very special place for him.
Oh, that's awesome. Like, he's in Stellenbosch, and I think not a lot of people know of him, but like, he's very knowledgeable, and he's also like, you can see he's a golf nutter. He's like, but there's a lot going on. But it's also like, he's got a lot of knowledge. But then again, like, there's nothing wrong with knowledge.
Yeah.
And you obviously just got to put it in perspective. But yeah, but thanks for having me. It's always fun. Boys, and hopefully next time, the last time I was on the show, I finished second.
Yeah. Yes.
So hopefully there's more good coming.
I was certainly not going to mention it, but I do think we were your inspiration. Because since you've come on the show, things have really started to happen. You know, if it wasn't for our hole-in-one clip, who would have known who Andre Pate was? You know what I mean? But boys, it's always an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for today.
Thanks, Albert. Thanks, Arthur.
Pleasure.